Namaskar, I'm Dattaveda Pragyananda, and welcome to DharmaCast. Today I'm going to start a series of podcasts based on the Yama and Niyama, which are the moral practices, which are the foundation of yoga. Actually, few people understand that yoga is very popular, I know, and many people practice. But not so many people know that it is a complete system, and the idea of that system is to bring a human being into unity with the Supreme Consciousness. That's what yoga means. It means union with the Supreme Consciousness. So to get to that great goal, there are a number of things which have to be done. And the first two limbs of yoga are called yama and niyama in Sanskrit. And yama, which we're going to start to talk about today, means that which controls. And these are a set of moral principles which help a person to become harmonious with the society around them. In fact, to practice yama, you need the society. You can't practice, as you will see, you can't practice it just by sitting by yourself. There has to be someone around you to practice it. So this is the idea, that we want to grow and become one with that Supreme Consciousness. And when we become one with that Supreme Consciousness, then there is no question about, oh, I have to follow this rule, I have to follow that rule, because at that time, then in our mind, the tendency to harm others, to steal or to cheat or to do bad things, that thought will not even arise. So how can we get to that state? To get to that state, though, we need to follow certain principles. They're like training wheels. You know, when you're riding a bicycle, a two-wheeled bicycle, to begin, sometimes you use some little small wheels on the back, the training wheels. But then when you learn how to ride, there's no question of the training wheels. You just, it's instinct. It becomes like instinct. Even if you don't do it for years, you can get on the bicycle again and do it. But we have to follow, in the beginning, we need certain people to help us. We need certain rules. We need certain practices. And that's what these moral principles of yoga are. Another way to look at it is, you know, like in certain religions, there are commandments, you know, the Ten Commandments. So people say, oh, you know, if you don't follow a commandment, you go to hell. These rules of yoga, these principles of yoga, are not commandments. You not go to hell if you don't follow them. But if you don't follow them, then you also discover that life becomes harder, and also it becomes more difficult to reach the goal of becoming one with that Supreme Consciousness. So let's look at yama, sadhana, the practices which help us to become harmonious with others around us. So the first practice is what we're going to concentrate on today, is called ahimsa. Ahimsa literally means non-harming. It means not to hurt others by thought, word, or action, not to inflict pain on others. So this is an important principle. It's like the number one thing. You know, that's why it's put A. You know, A is at the beginning of the alphabet, ahimsa, not because it begins with A, but it's just an important principle of life. And it's on the surface of it seems easy. You know, we're not going to just come and slap someone in the face or punch somebody or hurt somebody or torture somebody. This is kind of civilized human conduct. But really, in practice, we don't follow it so easily, because sometimes we say some things which hurt people. And sometimes what we say is more damaging than what we do. And sometimes we think bad thoughts which are intended to harm others. So the idea of ahimsa is to refrain from doing these activities. Now, this is it's not so simple as that. If it was so simple, then we could quit the podcast now. But unfortunately, it's actually pretty tricky to follow it. For instance, we don't want to hurt others. But what about other living beings? You know, there are plants and animals. Is it right to hurt a living being? One time I was traveling in India, and I saw some people. I was traveling on a train, and then I saw an amazing sight. I looked out the window. There were four or five boys. One boy had one leg of a dog, another boy had another leg, and a third had another leg, and a fourth had the other leg, and the fifth one was beating the dog. You know, so this is clearly not ahimsa. So we know that that's wrong. But what about when it comes to taking food? We kill animals. And some people say it's in the Bible. It says, yeah, we have dominion over the other animals. Now, yogis say we should apply ahimsa even when we take food. And they say the basic idea is that to think about the consciousness and in the living beings and to choose the food where consciousness is least developed. So this is applying ahimsa to this question of food. So I'm not going to tell you what to do, but the yogis have said, is think many times before you have to take the life of a creature, and just to try to take your food where consciousness is least developed. So that's why we follow this. Basically, we do follow this. We don't take food from humans, and even our family pets, we wouldn't think about slaughtering them, because we recognize that the consciousness is developed. So just apply this principle as best you can. This is what I will tell you right now, because I don't have that much time to go into a big discussion about it. But then there's also another question about ahimsa. Some people have interpreted, even they equate it with non-violence, means not to use violence against others. And generally, yes, this is, we should follow this principle. We should settle our disputes without violence, without harming others. But what about if somebody comes to us with violence? If someone tries to take our life, or tries to take our property, or tries to invade our country even, tries to burn down our property, tries to poison our family. What about this case? In the ancient yogic scriptures, it said that people who do these things are atatai, they're enemies. So in this case, you have, according to the yogis of old times and according to my teacher of the 20th century, he said that we have a right to defend ourselves from others. And in this case, when you apply force, that force doesn't fall under the idea of ahimsa or it doesn't fall under the concept of himsa or harming. He said that this kind of harm or this kind of force is used to prevent injury, to prevent destruction, to prevent chaos, and we have that right. So this is another question about of where ahimsa gets to be a tricky proposition, that we have to evaluate whether our actions are taken for defense in a legitimate way, or if really they're concealed aggression. So in many cases, you know, all the countries of the world say that they're for peace and they're for good things and for that thing and for ideals. But in practice, we have to see whether they are really practicing himsa, which is harmfulness, or ahimsa, which is non-injury. So we should try to, in our individual life and in our collective life, we should use force, but only sparingly and only when it's absolutely necessary. And in this context, I want to maybe close this short podcast with a story from the yogic folklore. So once there was a snake. and he was torturing a village. He was terrorizing a village because he was a deadly snake, and he was attacking and doing many bad things. So one day a yogi went to this village, and the people of that village asked the yogi to do something. So this yogi went to the snake, and the yogi had the capacity to talk to the animals. That was one of his like special miraculous achievements. So he went to this snake and he said, "Why are you bothering all the people of this village? They're good people. You should not do that. Don't harm them, please. Leave them alone." So then the yogi came back to the villagers and said, "Don't worry. In the future, this snake will not harm you. So lose your anxiety, please. Just go easy now. Don't worry. He's not going to hurt you." So the yogi left the village, and sure enough, that snake was not an evil villain anymore in the life of that community. So the yogi went on his way, and then after some months, he came back, and he wanted to see what was going on in that village. So he came back and he saw the people and said, "Well," he asked them, "has a snake attacked you or anything?" No, everything's fine now. But then he said he wanted to see the snake. What's the situation of the snake? So what happened was he went to, and he couldn't find the snake. And then finally he looked on the side of a road, and there was the snake, all battered and bruised and beaten. And then he said, "Well, what happened?" And the people of that village, the snake said, "Oh, the people of the village abused me when I went up to them. Then they were just, the boys took me by the tail and whirled me around, hit me against a tree. They did all these things. And now here I am in this pitiful condition." The yogi said to him, "Look, I told you not to bite. I didn't tell you not to hiss." So there is a practical example of applying ahimsa properly. But if you apply it properly, then you will live in harmony with others around you, and you will not be a menace to others. You will be an asset to others. The people who don't harm and the people who always try to heal are the true assets to the human society. So follow ahimsa, and this is the first foundation of morality, the first foundation of what it is to be a true human being. So thank you for listening. I'm trying to keep this short. This has purpose behind that, but there's a lot more that could be said about ahimsa, and in the future I will do that. So thank you, and namaskar.